Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host, sports journalist David Todd. And from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Talking Steelers like no one else does. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 20. And a couple things administratively. If it sounds like I'm on a cell phone, it is the case. I am driving to New York. So if you're in central Pennsylvania, where I am now, or Jersey, or in New York City, give a wave, because that's where I'm on my way to today. So forgive our audio quality if we're a little below standard. Also, wanted to give a shout-out to Dave, our buddy Charlie, who put together a new intro for us. We're taking suggestions on music. Charlie put that together himself. He's open. He's amenable to changes. So if anybody has suggestions on how we should do the intro, hit us up on Twitter or in the email. So, Dave, here we are. Steelers 1-0. It's Vikings week. Unfortunately, we weren't able to nail down our beat writer today, so we'll do that part on Friday. But 1-0 and the good news stuff on to it. Not season-ending injury. I think that was the big thing that came out the last 48 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mike Tomlin, of course, had his weekly press conference on Tuesday and went over several things, including the injuries, and he confirmed to the media the fact that Stephon Tuitt, the left bicep injury that he suffered two plays into the game against the Browns, was not season-ending. He's very optimistic, as usual, and indicated that there's a chance that Tuitt might play against the Vikings, but if anybody heard or read the interview that Tuitt gave last night on DVE radio with Jerry Dulac and others, that Tuitt is optimistic as well. But I think if people have read the update, the medical update that Dr. Mel provided us on Steelers Depot this morning, there's probably I'm willing to put my money down that Tuitt misses at least one game, maybe two. But the overarching big picture here is the fact that he's going to be able to resume playing sooner rather than later, and that of course is good news. I thought Tyson Alualu and LT Walton did a good job filling in for him in a game against the Browns. And really the only other really injury notes to come out, J.J. Wilcox, who suffered that helmet-to-helmet injury, if you will, late in the game against the Browns on that touchdown by Corey Coleman. He showed up on Monday with concussion-like symptoms. He was placed in concussion protocol. Not surprising. We'll have to wait and see what happens with him moving forward into this week. And Mike Tomlin really didn't give much of a update on Bud Dupree, other than saying, look, a guy like him is going to have to practice before he's able to play in stadiums. So, shoulder, ankle, whatever it is with Bud Dupree, we'll watch the injury report moving forward. The first one, of course, will be out after Wednesday's practice later on today. So that should catch everybody up on the health of the team. And as far as transactions go, which I'm sure we'll get into here, the Steelers terminated the contract of L.J. Fort in a bit of a surprising move. They signed Steven Johnson back to the 53-man roster, and on Wednesday morning, L.J. Fort was added to the practice squad, and rookie undrafted free agent Matt Galambos was turned loose.
Yeah, lots to cover there. On the Tuitt thing, I'm with you. If you had to put me down, if I got to put my my money on the roulette wheel, I'll put him out for two games. That would be kind of my likely scenario. I'd be shocked if he went this week, but we're just guessing. We will see what happens in the injury report. The Wilcox thing was odd to me because it was clear, Dave, at least, as much football as I've watched, the way J.J. Wilcox lay on the field after that hit at the goal line, it was pretty clear to me he was unconscious. And, maybe it's just semantics, but the way Mike described it is he said J.J. came in on Monday and said he was, showing signs or had symptoms related to that, maybe concussion related, so we put him in the protocol. Just kind of odd, because you would have thought after that hit and just seeing that, even if, the ostensibly neutral sideline guy would have said, this guy's got to you know, he's got to spend some time, you know, with the nerve, you know, going through the neurological tests. So, you know, maybe again, it's semantics, but that's the type of thing where we generally see if a guy is deemed to have a concussion, and that was not said yesterday, said he was in the protocol. Generally, I think it's if a guy does have a concussion, you usually can write him off playing the next week. Now, that doesn't mean if you're in the protocol, you're not going to play because maybe you didn't have a concussion. So we'll see what happens. Again, we'll follow what the injury report says. But if he doesn't go Thursday, he's most likely not going. And then Dupree, I'm with you. You know, just guessing, you'd like to, you know, you really would like to see him out there today. And if he's not, you know, who knows? But Ciccolo did well for himself out there. And you know, the Steelers will move forward. It's just, you know, Bud was so good coming back after missing more than half the season last year. You'd like to have him out there on the other side with TJ Watt. The roster shuffle, to me, is it, you know, this is I'm not being critical in any way, but is this the Steelers just trying to save a couple bucks because they might move Stevie on and off the roster, and they don't have to guarantee his contract because he wasn't on the roster on week one? I don't know the technicalities of exactly the rule book and cap stuff as well as you do. So do you think that's what it was? Is it a little bit of a shell game to save a little money?
Yeah, you know, and look, they have plenty of cap room to last them, you know, injury wise, a little bit more than they even usually like to keep, I think. So, I find it hard to believe that it's related to that. And look, if they thought Steven Johnson was going to be the better alternative for them, in week
going
one,
forward.
Right, in week one, in special teams related, then he would have been on the roster over LJ Ford. So I'm not sure what to really make of all this, because in my opinion, David, LJ Ford is the better inside linebacker of the two.
I concur.
And while Steven Johnson historically has been a superior. A better special teams player than LJ Ford. LJ Ford did have two special teams tackles in that game against the Browns. So really, you know, it is a bit of a head scratcher as to, you know, what's going on here and why the shuffle was made. I mean, they obviously are probably going to want four inside linebackers healthy. Who knows, David, by the end of the week, maybe something dictates that LJ Fort comes back on the roster and somebody else is waived as well too, or maybe this is just a way to guarantee that Steven Johnson gets full paychecks every week.
Yeah, but and as people will undoubtedly know, LJ Fort is practice squad eligible and Steven Johnson isn't. So you keep both guys in the fold this way. But I'm with you. I think LJ Ford's actually the third best inside linebacker the Steelers have. And I'm certainly happy to have the debate between Matakevich and LJ Ford. But, you know, I liked what he's done the past couple of years when we've seen him. He is certainly a competent special teams player. So just a bit of an odd roster shuffle. Dave, the other thing, we saw that Jordan Dangerfield now actually got waived. He was waived injured, now apparently healthy. So he's waived. So I thought maybe when they made the LJ Fort move, they were opening up a roster spot for Jordan Dangerfield. And certainly if J.J. Wilcox is injured and unable to go this week, you'd like to have another safety. So I thought that's where things were going to go, and was a little surprised at 6:48 a.m. this morning Eastern time to see the announcement from the Steelers that LJ Fort had been signed to the practice squad. So, you know, again, back of the roster shuffle. We care about it more than probably most people following the Steelers do, but just a little bit odd in terms of what we've seen here. All right, Dave, let me throw a couple things at you, because I was listening to some local radio, and it was suggested on one of the shows that Mike Tomlin's for the first time in his career, he's feeling some pressure to win this year. And I almost wrecked a car. And it was kind of around something, the narrative that you and I have discussed once or twice, where the Steelers are trying extra hard this year. Colbert and Tomlin are doing a little bit better job, and they're going to run a tighter ship and all this kind of stuff because Ben might retire, you know, sometime in the future. I know it drives you crazy, and today, this morning, it was driving me crazy.
Yeah, hogwash. Look, I mean, I think Colbert kind of laid it out a few weeks ago with the way the roster cut downs are and all like that. And as we said, look, and I think you tweeted something to the effect this morning, the Steelers didn't go after Joe Hayden. Joe Hayden
Which
was
they could have because the Browns tried to trade him.
Right. The Steelers signed a street free agent. You know, people forget that Joe Hayden was released. Now, when he was released, that gave every team out there, you know, 31 other teams, the opportunity to go after him and sign him. And
apparently some offered more money than the Steelers.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I think the groundwork maybe that Tomlin and Colbert laid going way back to the Hayden Pro Day, you know, way back before he was drafted, and perhaps the fact that, you know, the Steelers are a winning organization and expected to compete this year for the Super Bowl, and combined with the fact that Marquise Pouncey and Marcus Gilbert, two former Florida teammates of Hayden's, are on the team, a lot of that probably played into. And look, I mean, let's face it, Hayden didn't lose out here. He's still got $7 million this year. And, you know, that's a nice chunk of change. And to be able to play for a winner such as the Steelers, too, is a double jackpot, in my opinion. So, you know, I think this was just, you know, and look, I think Hugh Jackson probably not totally shocked that Hayden was dumped, but probably a little bit upset.
You saw the Jason Lacanfora report where Hugh Jackson was out of his mind, pissed off at Sashi Brown, and felt like that cut, and that was it. The offensive lineman Greco, just felt like the Browns are way under the cap, so it's not really a money issue. And at least according to Jason Lacanfora, who put the article out on Sunday morning, as often these writers do to get as much punch as they possibly can, he suggested that Hugh Jackson, there is a rift. A bit of a rift now between Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown because of the Joe Hayden release.
And Hugh Jackson kind of, you know, obviously and expectedly shot that down on the next press conference that he had when asked about that kind of stuff. But look, I mean, they didn't think they were willing to drop his. They didn't view him as an $11 million player, but I guess they viewed him as a $7 million player because evidently that's what they kind of wanted him to take a pay drop, you know, pay cut to. So, look, I mean, we could spend a whole show trying to figure out what the Browns have tried to do over the last it looks like a constant state of rebuilding. Now, obviously, I think you and I agree that, you know, Kizer looked good in that opener, and maybe the Browns have finally found them a quarterback here, but make no mistake, they're still, you know, at least a season or two away from being able to compete and get back in the playoffs.
Yeah, and, you know, Jabril Peppers did some nice things, and Joku did some nice things. We didn't get to see Myles Garrett, but, you know, Corey Coleman, last year's first-round pick, yeah, you'd like to think that they have some things going on. And remember this, if you did watch any of the demolition, maybe the most surprising result of the weekend, the Jaguars demolishing the Texans and their terrible offensive line, even though I think they got a great defense. Remember, the Browns have the Texans' first and second round pick next year. So if they go El Foldo and go, you know, 5-11, you know, that's going to be a top 7-8 pick along with their own pick in the first and second rounds. They're going to be able to add a bundle of talents to, you know, what should be what I think is a team that's going to win 4 or 5 games. They play the next 3 weeks. They play at Baltimore. That'll be a tough game. But they get the Jets at home and, you know, another weak team the next week. And then they get, I think, the Bengals. So, it's you know, it's not out of the question that 5 weeks into the season, the Browns are 2-3. We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look, we've covered this. Yeah, I think this was just the pieces falling right for the Steelers to go after, you know, to sign a guy like Joe Hayden, who's on the street last minute, and plus it gave the Steelers all preseason to take a good look at guys like Sensabaugh and Ross Cockrell in some man press situations to find out, hey, this probably isn't going to be ideal here. We gave it all. We gave it all. You know, all preseason, all training camp here. We don't like the results. Joe Haden is now on the street. So let's make an attempt to sign him.
If Joe Haden hadn't been cut, it would be Cockrell and Sensabaugh. You agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine any other cornerback right now. You know, the Steelers would have been able to sign that you know, maybe would have been an upgrade there. So yeah, absolutely. And look, hey, make no mistake, I'm glad Joe Haden is in Pittsburgh. I think it is an upgrade over Sensabaugh and Cockrell, but he was far from perfect in that game against the Browns the other day, and he's going to have issues, I think, such as that, especially early on in trying to adjust to his new teammates and when he is and when he isn't going to get help over the top. And we saw Corey Coleman on that long pass down the right side, kind of off the pump fake on the stop and go, kind of turn, get Haden turned around, and that was an easy pitching.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
That was an easy pitch and catch. And then, of course, the incompleted deep ball down the right side where Williams stepped
out of bounds.
Right. You know, that could have very easily been a huge turning point in the game as well, too, had that ball been completed. And, you know, you could say the safety didn't get over. You could say that Haden didn't drift far enough, being as how nobody was else, you know, coming on his side of the field there. Whatever it is, it was, you know, it was almost a big play that really could have been a game changer there.
Yeah, very good point. I think you and I are in the same camp. And, you know, oftentimes if we criticize any player or anything, you know, people immediately rush to their fence. And I, you know, I talked about that play where Kizer missed Coleman, I guess, on the one they didn't catch. And you know, I had five or six people yell at me on Twitter, well, it's cover two, it's not his responsibility. Well, if you watch the play, there's a slot receiver on the play who immediately runs an inside slant, and there's no back coming out of the backfield. So Joe Haden's job in cover two is not to stand there and guard the grass on the, you know, the yard, 10 yards from the line of scrimmage when there's nobody within 15 yards of him. His job is to run with that guy and, you know, be involved in the play. So, yeah, I get it's cover two, and he's supposed to have safety help. But having safety help doesn't mean, oh, well, it's his guy, not my guy. That's not how the defense works. It is a, you know, it's an amoeba. And it's as a unit, you got to make the play. And so I'm with you. I thought he was average at best in that game. He had a nice pass breakup. You know, he did a couple of good things, but they caught some balls in front of him. Okay, it happens. First game, happy to move forward. Dave, one guy we didn't mention once in our Monday press conference was James Harrison. And only four snaps, and I got to say, you were right about this from the get-go, but I have to say, I'm sure even you were surprised that he got as few snaps as he did.
Yeah, four in total. But I will tell you this: I was going through all of the dropbacks of Kizer on the All 22 film last night. I was trying to focus more in on T.J. Watt and what Chickalo did on those plays. But when I got to one of the ones, I think it was the first play that James Harrison was on the field for. That he pass rushed on. He had a nice bull rush on Joe Thomas and drove him deep.
He did. He pushed him in the backfield.
Yeah, he pushed him into the backfield. So, you know, this look, I mean, we'll see what this split looks like going forward. But and I know James Harrison has talked in the past about, yeah, it kind of messes up your game plan of how you can set tackles up, you know, throughout a game with your pass rush moves if you're not out there for a large selection of the snaps. But let me tell you, and make no mistake, T.J. Watt had a great game. He did a lot of good things, and when you say that, and when you figure the point that the guy that he was going against, Joe Thomas, is arguably one of the best, if not the best, left tackles in the league, especially from a technical standpoint. Yes, Joe Thomas got the best of T.J. Watt most of the time in that game, as you would expect a tackle to win most of the battles in that game.
Any tackle is going to generally get the best of a guy.
Right.
And because his job, you know, just holding a guy off versus a guy having to go get somebody, it's easier to hold the guy off, right? That's just the easier thing to do. And but yeah, you know, I'm with you. T.J. put it himself really well.
And my point being is that, you know, maybe you get in some situations where you know, TJ gets a little bit winded or whatnot. You know, maybe some hot days or whatnot. And you know, you can bring in the relief pitcher, if you will, James Harrison. And, you know, it's no playoff for the tackle that has to line up against James Harrison moving forward. But TJ Watt, I counted 7 plays that he dropped into coverage on dropbacks on. Once again, he showed some good bend around the edge when asked to do it. Some nice counters against Joe Thomas. There was some really nice battles between him and Joe Thomas on the all 22. And obviously on the interception, boy, what a nice deep drifting drop TJ Watt had. Of course, athletic ability and leaping ability to be able to haul in that interception as well too. So arrow is definitely pointing up on TJ Watt. Thought Anthony Chiclo also represented himself real well on that other side.
Yeah, and about Harrison, I've heard it's proffered again, you know, on radio yesterday, and I've seen it on Twitter a little bit, that Steelers are saving James Harrison. That's not the case. I promise you, they are not. Mike Tomlin, Heath Butler, and Joey Porter are thinking about winning the game on the schedule each Sunday, and they're not thinking about, let's keep James Harrison fresh for November and December. That is not part of the mindset in terms of how the Steelers are operating. And I'm with you, Dave. I will be curious to see over these next 2 or 3 weeks if TJ Watt continues to play well, if he's getting, you know, 80% of the snaps, 90% of the snaps. And I would expect that to be the case. If they feel like, you know, they can put him out there and he can do what he did on Sunday, you're not going to see James Harrison get 20 snaps out of 65 anytime soon if that continues. So I'm going to dismiss the, okay, let's keep Harrison fresh for December idea.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I know we're not really previewing the Vikings in this game and going kind of back to the Joe Hayden situation. Boy, that Steelers secondary is going to get a nice test this Sunday with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, boy. Just find the Twitter post by NFL.com last night showing all the catches that Stephon Diggs had and how they used him. You know, they use him a very similar to the way the Steelers use Antonio Brown. Try to line him up sometimes maybe out of a bunch and get him loose on a rub route or an underneath crossing pattern and getting the football in his hands and out into space. So look, that Adam Thielen is no slouch either. So this is when you throw in Dalvin Cook out of the backfield and all, this is certainly going to be a great test for us to look at the tape, win or lose, to see how that Steelers secondary and really the whole defense as a whole, because I thought, you know, it's something you and I have talked about for eons about pass rush and coverage going hand in hand, and Mike Tomlin really, really laid that out well during his press conference on Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am very excited to see this Vikings offense go against the Steelers defense. I've always been a bit of a Sam Bradford fan. I don't think people recognize the second half of 2015 under Chip Kelly. He played pretty well. He got thrown into the situation with the Teddy Bridgewater injury where, you know, here you are. It's your team. Go get them. And, you know, the Vikings had a pretty good season last year without Adrian Peterson really being a big factor. And I thought Bradford was pretty good. And you saw the emergence of Diggs last year as a, you know, maybe a top 10 receiver in the NFL. And I don't think many people would probably question that right now. Stephon Diggs is he's elite. D-line, he's an interesting guy. Obviously, him being white, people draw the comparisons, whether you like it or not. You look at white receivers. I saw somebody say the only person they could think of who D-line reminded him of was Santonio Holmes with more speed. I don't know. I mean, you know, Jordy Nelson is probably the elite white receiver in the game who's not a slot guy. I'm not sure there's actually another one out there. But those guys with Rudolph, you mentioned Dalvin Cook, maybe a bit of a sketchy O-line. They've been very good in the O-line in the past. It may not be quite as good, particularly at right tackle this year, but this is going to be a fun Vikings team to watch all year long in that new stadium. And, of course, If you heard that, if you saw the broadcast, or maybe you're aware that Super Bowl 52 will be in Minnesota, which I joke that that guarantees the Steelers will be there because they get all the bad weather sites or the bad weather coming. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing back to Thielen, you know, I think the easy, lazy comparison with him would maybe be a guy like Eric Decker, you know. You know, a kind of a bigger guy. I believe both those guys are something like 6'3". Like I said, Thielen out of nowhere, you know, really, really no slouch, a really combative type catcher as well.
Where did he go? Did he go to like North Dakota State too, or some with Wentz or something? I mean, I can't remember where he went. I'm not in front of my computer.
Well, they told the story like 30 times, I think, the other night during Minnesota State University at Mankato, right?
At Mankato, that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. Yeah, Minnesota State at Mankato, and just as a side note, one of the things that our listeners might not be fully aware of is Stephon Diggs went to Maryland with Sean Davis, and remember, Sean Davis played both corner and safety at Maryland, and he said going against Stephon Diggs every day in practice made him, you know, really honed his coverage skills. He said that was a real challenge. So just a little sidelight to what's going to happen on Sunday at Heinz Field.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of wrapping up the thoughts on the Browns game here. Look, I mean, Le'Veon Bell's performance, total yards from scrimmage was for his career, regular season speaking, was his lowest output for yards per scrimmage for his career. So you go back and you look at the tape, and what I did is I went through every run, all 10 of the runs that Le'Veon Bell had in the game against the Browns, and I got to be honest with you. You know, you think you see a lot on the TV view, but when you turn on that all 22, especially the end zone view, you can really see what happens there. And I got to admit, David, that I think Le'Veon Bell did good on the 10 rushes that he had to get the 30 whatever yards that he got, because just there was really no consistent running lanes for him in that game. I thought Jesse James missed a few blocks in there. I thought DeCastro didn't have a great game there. And when the inside wide receivers, Juju Smith particularly, were lined up near the line of scrimmage, he missed a down block inside as well too. So if you look at if you go back and look at all 10 of those rushes, Le'Veon Bell had to work to get several yards just to get positive yardage, because about two or three of those plays, he could have very easily been tackled in the backfield there. Now, I'm not trying to draw out an excuse for him missing training camp and the preseason and all like that, but I just think as a whole, and because the team was behind the chains and all, they obviously came out throwing the ball. We don't know what that had to do with affecting the rhythm of the offense. But let's not put it all on Le'Veon Bell, his low output in that game.
Yeah, you expect, you know, the play where you expect to get 10 or 12 yards is 3rd and 25, where he was lucky to get back to the line of scrimmage. I mean, the Steelers decided to run that kind of slow developing draw on that, you know, long distance third down, and Le'Veon Bell got nothing. I'm with you. You mentioned the first couple plays in the game. Ben mentioned today that, you know, that stuff's scripted. I don't know if Ben was taking a shot at Todd Haley or what. It's always scripted. There's nothing new. Every team scripts their opening drive. You might not exactly stick to it, but, you know, that's scripted. I think what you saw, and this is interesting because this is something that Ben has struggled with a little bit, is you saw Jabril Peppers, and if he's, you know, David, you obviously watched the All-22 and saw this. I mean, Jabril, he wasn't in the TV screen. He's playing 20, 25 yards off the line of scrimmage. And that's going to counter Martavis Bryant going deep. And, you know, I think everybody understands this, but just the point is, if Martavis Bryant's running the go route, the nine, and he's wide on the sideline, that just gives that safety an extra step or two to get there, to make, you know, to help on, if it's not if it's down the sideline versus a route breaking in toward him. It gives them a better chance to get there. And so you didn't see the Steelers take those shots down the field very often in that game. And that's the big reason why. And, you know, I like the idea of the those wide receiver screens, the bubble screens, whatever you want to call them, they do a couple things. One is the Browns corners weren't playing press right up tight. They were playing about 5 or 6 yards off. Now, as Dave pointed out, the Steelers didn't get great blocking from the receivers or tight ends on some of these plays, but you give a chance to Martavis Bryant or Antonio Brown where if they beat a guy at the line of scrimmage, all of a sudden the whole field opens up. I don't have any problem with that type of stuff. I'm all for it. When it doesn't work, I realize people get frustrated, and it obviously didn't work very well. But I was okay with that, Dave.
Yeah, and Ben, I think, talked about earlier today about sometimes you just have to do the proverbial kind of dink and dunk, and what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to try to draw some of those defenders up a little bit to open up your passing lanes deeper down the field there, and he did point to one time where he caught the safety at the snap of the football taking off to the other side of the field to cover Martavis Bryant deep over the top, and then that's when he went to Antonio Brown deep down the right sideline, and that was the play that they drew the pass interference on there. So there's a lot of cat and mouse that goes along in play calling on a week-to-week basis. A lot of times you're using some stuff to set up other stuff later in the game. Sometimes you use stuff to see how a defense reacts to maybe adjust that later in the game as well. Was it a perfectly called game? Absolutely not. Was it a perfectly executed game by the offense? Absolutely not. Ben missed some, wasn't on the same page with Bell on some of those dump offs there for whatever reason. And they had 9 plays where they ran where a running back was not even on the field, and they averaged 12 yards per passing play on those. And Ben talked about how, it gives them an opportunity to get a guy like Juju on the field. And, I think right now people want to jump to immediately, are the Steelers phasing out Le'Veon Bell out of the passing game? I just think one game is such a small sample size to jump to the conclusion that we're going to see, 20%, 18 to 20% empty set plays with no running back on the field. Let's give it some time to develop here, because make no mistake about it, Le'Veon Bell is a weapon out there, out of the backfield, wherever you line him up at, out wide or in the backfield as a pass catcher, and I doubt that you're going to go away from that too terribly much.
Yeah, you mentioned career lows in his numbers. I think I wrote in my quick thoughts that's up on Steelers Depot that I think all four of those numbers, his carries, his receptions, and his yardage from each, I think it's probably even money that all four of those numbers are season lows. I mean, if he's not injured, he's probably not going to have a game where he catches less than 3 balls. And he only had 15 yards there. And, his carries, when he finishes 10 for 32, I mean, again, if a game, circumstances dictate, obviously, but it's hard to envision a game where he's not going to carry it 10 times, and you'd certainly expect him to, at the end of the day, if he gets 10 or more touches, to have more than 32 yards. So, so that's the offense. They put up 14 points, certainly disappointing. Dave, the defense, I'm kind of I'm mixed on it. I mean, certainly they weren't bad. Couple things. One is you – if that's Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, as you pointed out with all the times of the sacks, Steelers are probably only getting 1 or 2 of those sacks. A quarterback's going to get rid of the ball. So they were the beneficiaries of that, as you pointed out on Monday. The thing that was, I think the disconcerting thing for me was the drive with 6:37 minutes left when they went down the field in 7 plays. The Steelers missed some tackles. They convert the fourth down for the touchdown. That's where you want your defense to stiffen up and just, make it, make the play on fourth down or, make some of the tackles so that at best they've got to settle for the field goal. So that was the drive that, that bothered me.
Yeah, absolutely, and like I said on the show the other day there, if you want to get upset about one drive, that one's probably it. Now, obviously the The penalties, you know, the late hits and all certainly didn't help things. You know, that's a lot of extra hidden yardage there on top of it. But you would like to see him stiffen up a little bit tighter late in the game when an opponent, especially with a rookie quarterback, is driving in your red zone there. So, you know, look,
six of the Browns' 21st downs due to penalty.
Wow. Oh, Mike Tomlin was unhappy with that William Gay call, wasn't he?
He was. And I, you know, as you pointed out, it certainly looked like they called it from the scoreboard, and he said he didn't get an – he used the word irate to describe himself. He was a little snippy there in the press conference yesterday.
Okay, does Gay get fined?
All four of the guys get fined. Even TJ will get fined.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. What about Ben? You think Ben's going to get fined for that ankle bite?
I don't. I don't. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking, because they could actually have thrown a flag on him for holding, but, you know, it's more funny than anything.
Yeah, Vontaze Burfict doesn't think it's funny. Ben could have done a better job of explaining his actions, I thought, but I'm not buying him just wanting to protect his other offensive linemen there. But it is funny, and it's going to be there's going to be a bit of an outrage if Roethlisberger is not fined for his actions there. But it was comical. But you want a good measure this week. Look at the penalty column against the Vikings here, because they certainly are not going to be able to come out with a home win. Committing 13 penalties for 144 yards against the Vikings. The Vikings are just too good of a team to not let you overcome that.
Yes, that will be interesting to see. Were all 13 calls, you know, perfect calls? No, of course not. I don't think Pouncey's hold was a good call. I'm not exactly sure what they called on Levy on a chop block or two to high load him or whatever it was, but, you know, most of them were deserved and. You know, live and learn from it and go from there. Dave, a few other things just in terms of the personnel groupings. You know, Juju on the field, I think 25 snaps roughly, and I don't think he got a target, and he had two holding calls, so it wasn't an auspicious debut for the number two pick. Vance McDonald, I think 17 snaps when you guys calculated it. In your head, when you watched it, did you look at Vance McDonald's one target there over the middle as a drop or a pass breakup?
Yeah, I mean, it's debatable, and I think when you look at the all 22 on that play, his back is to the end zone on that one there, so it's kind of hard to call. Matthew Marksey, who does our charting on the offense, said he did not rule it a drop, but it is a ball that still should have been caught just the same. He says that McDonald's going to have to make plays like these, and in fact, this one is one of the big areas in which tight ends disappointed, prompting the trade in the first place. You know, that's the type of play that they've had trouble over the year or first couple years with Jesse James making kind of that over the middle crossing route there. And, you know, it's debatable. I wouldn't get mad at anybody if they called that one a drop on McDonald. I didn't think McDonald had a great first quarter in that game.
He had a nice tackle.
Unfortunately,
he was on offense.
Yeah, he did. Look, I mean, right now, there's a world of room for improvement for Vance McDonald moving forward. And, you know, we'll see Jesse James, that game that he had the other day, although he was not perfect as a blocker either, he's not at risk at losing his first team snaps to Vance McDonald just yet. And, you know, I thought Jesse, look, I mean, that first touchdown pass that we talked about, Ben throwing it through the eye of the needle there. That was a great grab by Jesse just the same. So the throw was good. The catch was good. Obviously, Jesse had a couple other catches in that game as well, too. And, look, if he doesn't make those plays, You know, you very could, very well could be talking about a loss, you know, in week one to the Browns as well, too. So we'll see how that continues to work with them. You know, maybe like to see Roosevelt Nix used a tick more, maybe in the backfield. But the Steelers seem to be open to, you know, putting four wide receivers out on that field at certain times during the game. We'll see how that helps them against the Vikings this week.
If you were, you know, Friday we're going to go through, well, we got a lot of things to go through. We'll preview the Vikings. We'll give our picks and all of that stuff. Just an early guess here. You know, Stevie Johnson, you would assume, takes L.J. Fort's spot. Let's just, for this purposes of this conversation, say J.J. Wilcox is able to go. Would you expect the inactives to be exactly the same?
Well, I'd expect Tuitt to be down, so that's going to be different there.
Right, Tuitt, so you may have Tuitt and Dupree. You hope you flop Tuitt and Dupree. He comes back, and then I guess maybe Big Dan dresses, right?
Yeah, you would think maybe Big Dan dresses. Obviously, your two offensive linemen, Hawkins and Filer, are going to be down. Dobbs is going to be down. Let's assume that Tuitt is going to be down.
Justin Hunter probably doesn't get a helmet.
Yeah, Hunter's down. I mean, you're not going to dress all 10 linebackers, so who's down? Moats?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it if Dupree goes, is Moats down? You know, did you bring Stevie Johnson back to sit him? I don't know. One of those two.
Brian Allen's probably going to be down again.
Right, and that's your list. There it is.
So you have Tuitt, Dobbs, Hawkins, Filer, Hunter, Brian Allen, and really a linebacker, all dependent on whether Bud Dupree plays. I tell you, I didn't get a warm, fuzzy feeling from Mike Tomlin about Bud Dupree, David. You know, I might be reading way too much into it. That's a specialty of mine, in case you didn't know. But I just didn't get a warm, fuzzy feeling. We'll see what the injury report says. And look, I think Chickalo showed you enough in that game that if Bud Dupree is not 100%, you should sit him. You really should sit him, because you're going to need you need him healthy, and if he's not healthy, Chickalo's probably the better alternative anyway, and Arthur Moats can come in there and give you 4, 5, 6 snaps to spell him. So, you know, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I don't play Bud Dupree unless I'm 100% sure that he's his normal self there. So, I think that's your inactives, though, right there. I think you nailed him. It's going to be one linebacker, probably Tuitt, and then the other carryovers from the Browns game.
So not to get ahead of ourselves, but, you know, week one in the books, and you take a look around the NFL. And if you're watching the waiver wire and the transactions, you saw that the Bears lost Kevin White again, and one of their linebackers they put on the injured reserve for the season. White broke his collarbone. The poor kid. I think he was the 7th overall pick out of West Virginia 3 years ago now, and he just can't get on the field. And now, you know, look, I'm sure I would imagine he's designated to return, but he's going to miss, you know, 8 or 10 weeks here right out of the chute. The Bears, of course, the Steelers go to Chicago next weekend. That'll be their week 3 opponent. Danny Woodhead's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Dave, you tweeted about that yesterday. That's the Steelers' week 4 opponent. So something to pay attention to there is see what the Ravens do. And then, you know, this is a big game here on Thursday night early in the season for these two teams. And I'm not sure there were two teams the Colts looked worse than anybody. But aside from the Colts, I don't know that anybody looked worse than the Bengals going scoreless at home and Houston getting smoked by Jacksonville at home. They play in Cincinnati Thursday night. It looks like Deshaun Watson's going to get the start. But the loser of these two teams, the Texans take on, I think it's Green Bay, New England, and Cincinnati plays Green Bay, or I might have them reversed, in week 3. So you imagine one of these teams is going to start 1-2, and the other's going to start 0-3. And a lot of people picked both of those teams to make the playoffs. Start reason in their heads for their season record.
Yeah, pick me back up where you said you think both those teams, because you cut out there, David. Finish that thought.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so both those teams, you know, with the games next week with Green Bay and New England, Really difficult schedules here early in the year. Somebody's going to be 1-2. Somebody's going to be 0-3. And both those teams, you know, a lot of people picked them to make the playoffs. And I'm sure they both in their head had week one wins on the books, you know, opening the season at home against teams that weren't very good last year. So, you know, behind the eight ball early.
Yeah, and boy, this game Thursday night, is this going to be one of these 13-6 games? I mean, you got a Houston defense that you think should be able to get after that Cincinnati Bengals offensive line, and on the flip side, you have a Bengals defense that should be able to get after a rookie quarterback as well. So you wonder how many points defense might have to score some points in this game. I think.
Yeah, there you go.
This. I hope we're not in for another season of kind of Thursday nights, ugly, sloppy games, if you will. But
We got a good one to open the season. We sure got a delightful one last weekend.
Thursday. Yeah, we sure did there. And look, I mean, it's say what you will about Baltimore's defense. It's going to be interesting, I think, to watch Baltimore face see what Cleveland can do against Baltimore this week as well too. And look, I mean, we could come out of this situation where Cleveland's 0-2 and Cincinnati's 0-2 and the Steelers in Baltimore 2-0. A two-game lead in the division for two AFC North teams. That might be tough for a team like Cincinnati to overcome.
Yep, a lot of work. Seeing as they got both Pittsburgh and Baltimore on the road coming up, and they've been not good against the Steelers at home. So, and if they lose that Week 3 game, then really their season is looking rough. The other big news around the NFL, of course, is the David Johnson news. And I know, Dave, I don't know if John Clayton has this information, but I get so tired of hearing people say, well, guys who miss the preseason or don't play in the preseason are so much more likely to get injured. I've never seen any data on that. I'm not going to just out of hand say that it's patently false, but I would bet that it's patently false. Guys get hurt all the time. It's the NFL, man. If they get hurt in preseason games, they get hurt in games. And David Johnson, it didn't matter whether he was at training camp or not, you get your wrist fractured and have to have surgery. That's just an unlucky break. And there's another team that went to Detroit, got off to an early lead. Carson Palmer was bad. This is probably the last go-round for Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald. And you lose David Johnson for most of the season here, whether it's 2 or 3 months, it's most of the season. I think you can write the Arizona Cardinals off in week 2.
Yeah, look, that's going to be tough to look. We'll find out how good of offensive adjustments Bruce Arians can make over there without, having a weapon like Johnson. And when you go back and you look at that hit and injury suffered by David Johnson, I don't care if David Johnson played 130 snaps during the preseason or four. That was just an unfortunate, play and hit. No playing time differential during the preseason would have made a difference, I don't think, in that injury. Now, if you want to talk to me about soft tissue injuries and stuff like that, maybe I can buy into that kind of stuff, but I'd have to see a detailed breakdown over the course of, let's say, the last 5 years or something like that before I can have my arm twisted. I think more than anything, I think where players hurt and who knows with the Steelers is not having continuity with players, and especially on offense, by not playing your starters for more than just a couple of series. And although if you go back to last year, Ben Roethlisberger and company didn't play very many snaps during the preseason. They came out and they just absolutely torched the Washington Redskins on Monday night. And then you turn around this week and they kind of laid an egg against the Browns with the same scenario there. So
Le'Veon Bell came off his 3-game suspension, I think went for 18 and a buck 44 and 4 or 5 catches as well.
You know what it comes down to, David? It comes down
fit
to what
narrative, man. Fit the narrative.
It comes down to what Bill Belichick says. Do your job.
Right.
Execution, it's all about execution there. So, interesting game here coming up for the Steelers at home against the Vikings. Mike Tomlin is what is he, 9-1 in home openers since he took over. The one loss, I think, being, what was it, 2014 or 15 against the Titans. That was the game that Maurkice Pouncey, you know, tore his knee up right from the get-go. And,
yep. And that was, wasn't that the season, am I getting them right? Was it 13? Where they started 0-4 and they played the Vikings in London? Was that year? Was it that they?
I think it was the next year, if memory serves me.
That would have been losing two home openers if it was the next year. So it must have been that year.
Well, you know, when they lost to the Vikings, they lost to the Vikings in London, and you know that, right?
Yeah, in London. But I mean, they lost their first four games that year. So did you say he's 9-1 in home openers?
Yes.
So it had to be that year because they wouldn't have played four games on the road to start the season.
You are correct, sir. I'm looking at it right now. 2013, they opened up with a loss at home to the Tennessee Titans. Remember, that game got off to the goofy start with a kickoff
safety. Yeah. That was the highlight.
And then they went to Cincinnati and lost 20-10. They then went and lost to the Bears and I think Jay Cutler 40-23 at home. And then the next week was in London when they lost 34-27 to the Vikings.
And all hell was going to break loose. The ping pong table was out of the locker room. No more games, man. And look, they went 8-4, and they were a 37-yard field goal, 39-yard field goal away from making the playoffs.
And then remember that was also Mike Adams was benched. That gave birth to Kelvin Beachum at left tackle after those first four games as well too. And
that was the can they tackle any? First of all, it's kind of interesting that this year and that year the Vikings go home with one of the teams, and then road to the other. So they get last time it was Chicago at home, and then obviously went to London, and this time it's the Vikings at home, and they go to Chicago. So just an odd scheduling quirk. But remember that game? Was it Adrian Peterson who ran up the middle, and every guy on the team missed the tackle? I mean, that 80-yard run he had. Am I getting my games right? It just feels like that game. In particular, I think we counted, I'll have to go back and read my recaps. I have like 16 or something missed tackles that game.
Let's see here. I've got the big plays from that Minnesota game there. Peterson had a 60-yard touchdown run off right guard in that game.
Nobody touched him. Well, everybody touched him. Nobody tackled him.
Yeah, and he also had, I think, a 19-yard run in that game as well, too. And remember
did they
that
have
was
an 80-yard touchdown catch.
Remember that was a slant to a slant to Greg Jennings that he took 70 yards.
See, another play, nobody touched him. You know, slant and go, and it was definitely go.
And then he also had a deep pass to Jerome Simpson in that game as well, too. 51-yard gain as well, too. That might have been against Cortez Allen, I think, in that situation there. But not a great game that one in London. That's for sure.
Anything else for the press conference? Mike had some nice words for Childress. His coach when Mike, you know, 10 years ago when Mike was 11 years ago when Mike was the his 1 year as a DC, Ray Childress, right? Is that his first name? It's very complimentary words about getting an education there his first year as a coordinator, his only year as a coordinator.
Yeah, he said he had it with Brad Childress. He said he was he said he was a first time head coach, and he the quote says, and he really allowed me behind the curtain, did a great job of really kind of educating me in terms of some of the things that he was having to deal with as a first-time head coach. He even shared some of the responsibilities with me in an effort to help him as he was highly involved in the offense. All that aided me in my growth and development. And really, I think it was a catalyst for my preparedness for this opportunity with the Steelers. I'm thankful for my time in Minnesota. They were great people, and big service extended to me by Brad Childress during his time there.
Yeah, that was very nice of him. Did you think Mike was Well, Mike obviously didn't want to hear any more about Le'Veon Bell missing training camp. I thought he was a little rough on Aditi, cutting her off. She asked, and then she followed up, and he cut her off both times.
Yeah, well, you know, look, I love Aditi, okay? But she tries to use the old, I'm going to ask the question three different ways and try to catch you. Catch you saying something, you know, catch you kind of backtracking, and Mike would have nothing of it. I said what I said.
Right, period. You know, he had a couple of those. He was a little testy, and so be it. That's always good Mike Tomlin stuff. Yeah, I was surprised nobody asked about O.J. Ford. Let me ask you one other roster question, Dave. Your best guess. Is Jordan Dangerfield getting a paycheck from the Steelers by Saturday?
Boy, that's a good one. You know, look, I mean, they're not going to go into the game with three safeties, I don't think. You know?
Yeah, and if Wilcox can't go, we might see the Steven Johnson dance again this week.
Yeah, Steven Johnson might not. They might not put a nameplate on his locker or something. I don't know, but.
By the way, for those who don't know, he gets his game checks when he's on the roster on Tuesday. He gets his game check for the week, so he's getting paid. And I'm sure he'd rather play than not, but he is getting paid.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe they would only dress three safeties. So if Jordan Dangerfield's healthy and Wilcox can't go, I mean, it's an easy piece of the puzzle to fit right back in there. And Jordan Dangerfield, you know, maybe this is kind of a signal that this is going to come. Maybe because they know that Jordan Dangerfield's going to be up and play a lot of snaps. I don't know.
Let's move Fort first and then we'll play the game with Stevie. The only thing about Stevie this week is because Jim Dangerfield's not on the roster, you'd think you'd like to have him at worst go through the walkthrough on Friday, and you'd probably like to have him practice Thursday. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that move. If Wilcox can't go today, if we see that move in the next 24 hours rather than on Saturday.
Well, here's the thing. You know, they probably want to dress for inside linebackers too. So –
Justin Houston. You wouldn't think it'd be him, but I mean, we did this dance last week. It's probably not going to be Dan McCullers because he gets a reprieve because of Tua's injury. So Brian Allen, all of a sudden it gets interesting.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And you got to keep in mind that you have to have seven inactive players, too. You know, the curious thing is normally when they make moves due to injuries kind of last minute, they wait until Saturday to make the move, you know?
But because they've already had the guy on the roster of the practice squad. Dangerfield's neither right now. So he's not allowed to practice with them.
Right. So, And that's another thing. You would think if Dangerfield's coming, he would,
today. Come today or tomorrow.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they're set right now, David. You know, maybe no more moves the rest of the week unless somebody gets injured in practice there. But we'll see. I don't think we've seen the last of L.J. Fort on the 53. I don't think we've seen the last of Dangerfield on the 53. I mean, look, it's a long season. Injuries happen. A lot of shuffling's going on, and those guys might just be part of this shuffling this year.
Did Brian Allen play special teams?
No, he was inactive.
Oh, right. He was. So the only guys who didn't get a snap were Josh Dobbs got no snaps, obviously. Oh, he was inactive. Who? Landry Jones got no snaps. Who else? Grimble got one on offense. Cody Sensabaugh got none defensively, right?
I think he played some special team snaps, though. Cody did.
Not a lot.
Finney, I don't think played.
Oh, BJ, right. BJ Finney didn't play. I knew there were two guys who didn't play who dressed, right.
Yeah, I think it was Finney and Landry Jones were the two that got, you know, no time whatsoever there.
So the three free agent signings in the offseason, Miles Davis no longer with the team, Justin Hunter doesn't get a helmet, and Cody Sensabaugh is hardly seen. So not a lot of splash out of the three free agent signings.
Yeah, but Tyson Alulu, don't forget about him.
Tyson Alulu was good.
He really was good, and I expect him to get a huge chunk of snaps against Minnesota. As we said, expect Tua down there. So, all right. Well, I know you're on the road, and we'll hopefully get a beat writer in here that covers the Vikings on the Friday show, and we'll go through what we normally do on Wednesday on Friday. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And once again, we apologize for David having to do this by cell phone today, but he is on the road there, and he'll probably be back in front of the computer by Friday.
I will be in front of the computer on Friday. Also, let us know your thoughts on the intro. Thanks again for the donations. It is a nice, we appreciate everybody who does that, takes part in that aspect of things. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.